go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 48 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. What have I been up to the past week or so? I have been practicing how to bob and weave my head in an attempt to avoid incoming bullets, much like our former President Trump was able to do so over a week ago. I feel as though I must make a disclaimer right now. I am recording this episode, 48, in the studio, aka my bedroom, on Wednesday night, July 17th. The episode will be released on Monday, July 22nd. I'm recording it early, as I often do, to give myself a few days to edit and link up all the clips I need to put together to make it stunningly beautiful for all of you. I'm saying all of this because there's probably going to be some new information after I record this episode about the attempted assassination. That's why I'm making all that disclaimer, because I have been consumed by the event that happened over a week ago. A couple of reasons why. One, when I was in college, I worked security at Mohegan Sun Casino in Uncasville, Connecticut. I did security all over the casino, on the gaming floor. They had an arena there where they would have concerts. I did it there. I did security outside of the casino, around the perimeter. And two, something else you should know about me, the B-Man, I am a self-proclaimed conspiracy theorist. And one of the major conspiracy theories that I've spent a lot of time researching is the JFK assassination. What I'm getting at here is these two things about me are probably why I've been constantly scrolling through X, trying to find new information, trying to decipher between junk and real information about this attempted assassination of our former president. And I should also note that all of us here at Verbal Graffiti are anti-assassination attempt. I'll even broaden that and say we are anti-killing and murdering of any person, not just a political elite, just anyone in general. Let's just peace, love, and drink a tall boy. Where do I want to go? Where do I want to go with this assassination attempt? It seemed, first of all, the lady. Let's just get into it. The Secret Service agent who cowered down in the fetal position right as the bullets were coming at Trump. And that's your one job. Your one job as a Secret Service around the president is to jump on him and take a bullet for the president. I don't judge her. I do not, because she is my spirit animal, or maybe my spirit person, because I know everyone was laughing at her. When I saw that, I'll admit, I laughed at her. But I do the same exact thing. And I kind of have this theory. When I was working security at Mohegan Sun, I believe I was making maybe $11.50 an hour. And my theory is your willingness to put yourself in harm's way as a security guard should be dictated by how much you're being paid. And you bet your ass, $11.50 an hour is not enough for me to risk my livelihood for a casino. I was not putting my well-being at risk at all. If someone wanted to come into the casino when I was on shift on the gaming floor, you could have taken all the chips and I would have let you walk out. I would have gotten fired and been like, whatever. I still have my arm. I'm still mobile. I'm not paralyzed. I'll go get another job somewhere else. Now, I say all this because I don't know how much Secret Service agents are making. I got to assume if you're an agent who's on detail of a former president, I got to assume you're probably making at least $150,000. That is the cutoff point. If she was making that agent who ducked and cowered in fetal position behind the podium and didn't know how to get her gun in and out of her holster, if she's making over $150,000, she should have jumped on a president. That's enough money to risk your well-being. If she's making under $150,000, none of us should judge her. That's not enough money. You could barely afford your mortgage and an economical car like a Hyundai. That's not enough money. Like, she could have just baby crawled to her car and just left the scene and never come back. And I wouldn't judge her at all for that. With all that said, she's got to resign because that lady cannot show her face at the 2024 Secret Service Christmas party because there's nobody who's going to want to look at her in the eyes. She's going to have to drink alone in the corner with the guys who are doing, who are the bartenders making the drinks because none of her colleagues want anything to do with her. In their mind, she is not a Secret Service agent anymore. You might as well put in your 2 weeks and just go work, be mall security because you don't have the makeup to be a Secret Service agent, especially one, you know, in the middle of a campaign rally. Secondly, when I first saw the aerial shots of where the rally was held, like, obviously, the first thing I'm thinking about is, hey, well, if there's going to be a random guy trying to knock off the president, where is he going to be? One, on top of that building, and two, which many people haven't spoken about, is that big water tower that was a little bit behind where Trump was and maybe, I don't know, 200 yards away. Those were the two spots where I'm like, if there's going to be something that goes down, those are the two places. That's what gets my conspiratorial mind going. And much like any murder scene, crime investigation, the number one question you have to ask yourself is motivation. What was the motivation? Some people are saying the president did this to himself. Trump cut his ear like a wrestler does. Like, you go out to a canvas, Ric Flair is on the ground when nobody's looking. He slices his ear with a razor, gets up, and it looks like he got hit by a chair. I don't see the motive for that with Trump because he was ahead in the polls. The media was trashing Biden because of his terrible first debate appearance. They're questioning his cognitive state of mind, rightfully so. So the juice ain't worth the squeeze for Trump to fake an assassination attempt to make himself look stronger. Was it just bad policing, bad Secret Service, just not employees that weren't trained enough? Well, if you saw those female Secret Service officers, you could say, yeah, this was just my bad. We need to do better training. We'll get at you next rally next weekend. I'm hesitant to say what I want to say because I do come at everything from a conspiratorial mindset. And this is everything about this is screaming conspiracy theory that this guy was a patsy. Like, why was a ladder up against the building? Why wasn't there Secret Service on that building? Why were there all the just bystanders with their cameras yelling at the police officers? There's a guy on the building. There's a guy on the building, and he has a rifle. And we know a police officer went up. The gunman turned his rifle at the policeman. The police guy just said, "Peace out. I don't want any of this." And he jumped down. Something nefarious happened that afternoon, that evening in Butler, Indiana. And I do believe it was probably an inside job. I don't know who was pulling the strings or who gave the call not to shoot the attempted assassin. I'm going to be doing a lot more research about this one. I enjoy it. It's got everything that I love. I don't love assassinations, but conspiracy theories and murder mysteries and political geopolitics. Whoo, baby, I've had a fun week scrolling through X trying to decipher what's real and or not. I will say that lasting image of Trump with his fist up, with that a little bit of blood saying, fight, fight, fight. That's probably going to be the lasting image of Trump and whatever it's been since 2016. So, you know, the from when Trump walked down or went down that golden escalator at his building to date, when whatever happens with this presidential election, and if he does become president, that image and his mugshot image are the two images that are going to live on forever in history books. Decades from now, when kids are looking at Trump, those are the two photos that they're going to see. And whether you love him or hate him, those are pretty badass photos. It does make me go back in the catalog and review every other president's lasting image. Now, I won't go all the way back, but I'll go like at least my lifetime or, well, let's start with JFK. Lasting image of JFK is obviously his brains on the back of a convertible next to a grassy knoll. It's probably that and also that first debate with Nixon when he was glowing. He had a great tan, much like I do right now, and that old curmudgeon Nixon who was sweating and just not, he didn't have, Nixon ain't JFK. I don't need to say more than that. Those are JFK's two lasting images. Nixon, Richard Nixon's obviously has got to be him after he resigned, getting on a helicopter going, I am not a criminal. I'm not sure if that's actually what he said, but those two peace hands are the two peace signs that he made. And then he walked on and went wherever the hell he went. That's his lasting image. Bush Sr., his lasting image has to be that debate where he said, read my lips. I will not raise taxes. Goodbye. You raise taxes. Never to be seen again. Clinton, his lasting image, it has to be during that investigation, that interview where Clinton said, I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Monica Lewinsky. What up? Do you like verbal graffiti? Not a great image for him, must admit. George W. Again, he also did not have a great lasting image. His was probably, you got to go with 9/11, where he's reading nursery rhymes to like third graders as there's towers that's being hit by planes. That, I'll also give him the mission accomplished where the war was not accomplished. And also when that reporter threw the shoe and he kind of ducked, much like Trump did. So those are his three lasting images. I'm not really sure what Obama's are. Maybe just the night he got elected, where he walked out with Michelle Obama. I believe they were in Chicago and they were kind of holding, you know, it was a big deal, first biracial president, black president. So that's probably his big moment. And now Trump, we got a guy with a fist up, blood, saying fight, fight, fight. So out of all of them, you know, Trump's winning so far. But as we've seen with Trump, you never really know. There's always another scene, another episode. Will he fall on his face? Will he do something even more outrageous? We'll report it here at Verbal Graffiti if it does happen, and we'll probably be a few days behind when we do so, because this is a one-man operation. With all that assassination attempt out of the way, let's get into something I found on Reddit. This one, I relate to this one a lot. Comes from the subreddit Anti-Work. My coworkers get so angry when they realize I don't care about the company we work for. You don't say. I work hard and efficiently, but when coworkers sense that I simply do not care about the billion-dollar company we work for, they become like sharks smelling blood. It's bizarre. They feel a weird sense of loyalty to accompany that simply does not care about them. And when another employee doesn't have that same devotion, they react with anger. I'm not sure why they do so, but I am certain they don't know why either. This reminds me of how black slaves in the U.S. used to argue over whose master had the biggest house. What an analogy you gave us there. Bizarre behavior. I'm sure it will be studied in the future. Well, let's just discard that analogy with the slaves and how big their owners' houses were. I don't know if that's true or not. But everything else you said, I feel like you and I are kindred spirits because I have the same exact thought process. Sometimes you need to learn life lessons yourself by being an observer. And one lesson I learned is when my father died, I was 30 years old when my father died, and he worked for a company called Ripley Tools for, I don't know, almost 40 years. And when he was 60, my dad died at age 63. At 60, he was diagnosed with a rare disease called supranuclear palsy. Got that at age 60. By age 63, he was dead. It just kind of deformed his body where he wasn't able really to move. He didn't have control over his autonomy. And it was a very drastic downfall of his life. And as soon as my dad, wasn't able to walk or wasn't completely all there in the head, his company got rid of him. And right there in that moment, that's when I realized, oh, your company doesn't care about you. This is a money relationship. This is not a love relationship. And when my dad died, nobody from the company was at his wake except for the few coworkers and secretaries that he was friends with. And they only came because they were friends of his, not because of some work obligation. And since he died, I have not heard from his company at all. So I am with you. Why in God's earth would you give everything you have to your company? In my life, I've worked for two corporations, like large. I did a little bit of teaching. I've had a bunch of weird, like security at the casino. I've done a polling institutes, but I've had two like corporate jobs. And because of what happened to my dad, I made a promise to myself is I'm going to put all my efforts into what my passions are, and I'm going to do what is needed to stay employed and nothing more for corporate America. The company I work for now, I'm a mercenary. I work for them. I go in. My workload, I am above average with the work I'm able to complete. I do a good job, but I'm not going above and beyond because, hey, this year I got a merit raise that was laughable, the percentage, and I know how this company works. A couple months from now, they'll up our health benefits. We'll have to pay more up front, so that will cut into the laughable merit raise I got. So, hey, I'm doing my job, but I'm not doing more. I'm here to get paid, nothing more, nothing less. This is a financial agreement. There's another company I worked for, and I'll name this one because they're no longer in business, a company called Reese. And that one I worked on Fifth Avenue, Manhattan. We had like half cubicles, and I can't hide my facial expression. I have a terrible poker face. So I did not like being there. I would do the job. I was good at it, but I just constantly had a frown on my face, so much so that other employees would walk by, and at least once a week, I'd hear somebody say, "Hey, you know, hey Brian, you know it's okay to smile once in a while." I get why women get upset. Sorry, I get why babes get upset when guys tell them to smile. I understand it because I had almost 3 years hearing that every week in that cubicle, just being miserable and beaten down and just just doing what I had to do to get that paycheck every other week and to get the benefits so I could have healthcare and get a physical and find out what's wrong with me. Oh, corporate America, it's like, you know, I also have recently, less than a year ago, I was in a Zoom meeting and we had an employee for the company I work at now who she opened up the meeting talking about how much work, how much effort, how much passion she put into this new system we were integrating, data system we were integrating into our company. And as she was expressing how much effort and she put her soul in this project, I was looking at her through Zoom, like, what the fuck is wrong with you? This company doesn't care about you. This is not the place where you should be going above and beyond and working on weekends and not working through your lunch and not eating, doing everything to do. This is just a job. That's all it is. This is corporate. This is a billion-dollar company, like this lady in this post. Like I'll tell you right now, I put a lot of effort, a lot of my soul into stand-up comedy. Like, comedy is my passion. Whatever form I do it in, whether it's stand-up in front of a small crowd, which it mostly is, whether it's through written blogs. I had a written blog called After Time Expires. I believe you could still go look up the website. And now this project, Verbal Graffiti, whatever the fuck this is. I spend a lot of time recording episodes, editing them, learning new skills, creating sketches, taking photos. Right now it's like 1 a.m. and I got to be up at 8 a.m. But I don't complain about it because I love it. It's what defines who I am. Comedy is my identification. And that's why I'm willing to give everything to it. Not so much for you, but for me, because it's who I am. Let me ask you this question right now. What do you identify as? And that's what you need to answer. Like, I'll tell you another one. Like, my brother, when he was going through a rough period in his life, he was going through a divorce, he had kids. Any of you who have been through a divorce with a kid knows how difficult, how just mentally fucked up that can make you. So what did my brother do? Instead of whining, no, he got into CrossFit. He got really into it. He would work out 3-4 hours a day, and he kind of got ingrained into that culture. And I believe, I really haven't asked him this, but I just always assumed that during that time period, that's what he identified himself with. He identified himself with CrossFit, fitness and health, in bodybuilding, and that's what helped get him through that difficult mental period in his life. Now, what I suspect with all your employees with the company who get angry at you for not having passion for your work is their identity is their work. See, they probably have a house, they live in the suburbs or maybe a metropolitan area, but when they look outside, they have what everybody else has. They have a house, they have 2 cars, they have a few kids, but so does their neighbor. So does the guy across the street. So do the people down the street. Everyone in their vicinity has the same exact thing. So the only thing that differentiates them is their job. So that becomes their identity. And the reason why they're circling you like a shark is because you're threatening their identity by not caring about your job, by just doing the work to get the paycheck. Because what do you do when somebody threatens you? You combat that with violence. You come back at them with insults or maybe a fist. Now, they can't punch you because it's corporate America, so they chastise you for not buying into the culture of your company, not going to all the seminars, not entering the Zoom meetings with the polo, with the company logo on the chest, not working on weekends, not staying late. You're just doing the job. And by doing that and by being vocal about it to your colleagues, you're kind of If I have to describe, it's like coming out of the shower and wiping all the steam on the window off. Like you're erasing the facade that your coworkers have up. Like they identify with the company they work for, and you're calling balls and strikes. You're like, hey, dude, we're just here to get our paycheck every 2 weeks. Why are you rah rah? Let's get to work. Let's be passionate. And you're challenging their belief system, and that for them is very scary. It's because if they start, it's much easier for those employees to stay in their facade, to stay in that bubble, to think that this corporation is important to them, that the company cares about them, that it's a caring, loving relationship. And you're calling out that's complete bullshit, that we're only here for the paycheck, everything else, go fuck yourselves. So they don't like that because it's challenging their worldview. And people do not like having their worldview challenged. And that's why they're coming at you like a shark in water. And that's the reason why I believe they're doing it. Fuck corporate America. Go personal projects. Work on your passions, even if you're not getting paid for it. Like, I'm not getting paid anything yet for verbal graffiti and very little to do stand-up, but we love it. It's my legacy. Let's go look at some photos. What can I say? That first segment went 26 minutes long. Those of you who have been with me since the beginning, and when I say beginning, I do mean episode 1 of Verbal Graffiti, might recall that I made a proclamation that each episode was going to be between 10 to 20 minutes. First segment, 26. I'm overshooting how long I want all of these to be. If only my cum shots were like that. Not going to apologize, though. I am not the B-man. I'm not going to apologize because you need to know when I start rambling about conspiracy theories and assassinations and attempted assassinations and U.S. presidents and my enmity for corporate America, my opinions, my viewpoints do not have endpoints. I could ramble on and on forever. I can't do so, though, because my memory card is almost empty, so I needed to cut it somewhere. I do love U.S. presidential history much more so, though. I've always been fascinated with the first ladies. I've never disclosed this publicly, but the last year or so, I have had this thought percolating in my head like a brewing pot of hot coffee. I do want to make a double-sided comedy album where I talk about nothing but the pubic hair of all of our first ladies. And that would include every first lady except James Buchanan, who actually did not have a first lady. He was our only bachelor president. But his niece, I believe her name was Harriet Lane, kind of acted as a first lady. But hey, that's his niece, so I'm going to be respectful and not talk about her pubic hair or what I think it might be. Really wanted to do that. Haven't really figured out how to structure it yet. So look for that in the coming years. That first segment, we got into some serious topics. Let's get into something a little bit more goofy. Saw this one on the subreddit for dentistry. Can I take teeth from my dental office? Hello, I work at a dental office and am interested in collecting special teeth just like my doctor's boss. Though I'm anxious about her saying no when I really want to keep them and make art. I am wondering what if I just kept the teeth anyway that she didn't want without asking. Since it just goes in a medical waste bin and I know how to properly care for the extracted teeth, could there be any legal repercussions or consequences that my office can be upset about it? Is there any rule against this in Southern California? Edit. Let's say my boss and or my director say no, and I do it anyway. Could I get in trouble? Because there's nothing in our policy against an employee keeping teeth. is this a thing? Because I've never even thought about this. I didn't realize there are dentists and dental hygienists who are stealing our teeth after they extract them from us. I always have heard about the tooth fairy, but I didn't know there were actual dentists out there that are tooth thieves. This makes me very queasy to know that there are actually dentists out there that will take a tooth from a patient and bring it home to do some type of arts and crafts project on your own time. There's something that's unsettling about that, to say the least. It's not taking my tooth or taking anybody's tooth. It's not a sexual crime. It's not a sexual violation, but it is a violation of our bodies, our person. It does seem like that should be a criminal act. Like, you bet your ass. If you're a dentist and I pay you $1,000 to give me a root canal, and then I find out that you took my tooth home without asking me, you bet your ass I'm bringing a lawsuit to you and I'm taking you for everything you're worth, because that's unjust. I don't think that should be legal. Honestly, I've never looked at the law because I've never even contemplated that there are dentists out there doing this, that there are dentists that pop, okay, sliding it in their pocket and going home at 5 p.m. with it to put in their living room as a display when guests come over. Like, hey, look at all these teeth I took out. Like, we're some type of, fishing for sharks and we gut it and we take the teeth out and we make a necklace out of it. But that's a shark tooth. We're just dealing with human teeth here. I don't think it's legal. I don't know. I do know with real surgeries, and I do believe extracting teeth is a surgery, although my oldest sister, Carrie, vehemently disagrees with me. My thought process is, hey, if they knock you out, you're unconscious, you have anesthesia, and they're putting foreign objects in your mouth, that's surgery. That's the definition of surgery. And what I know about surgery is you're not allowed to bring your own body parts home after a surgery. I know because I have asked. I have a problem with facial acne, especially cysts. I don't really know how to say that, but I get these big cysts on my face, much more so in my early 20s. I've had to have had at least 3 surgically removed, one in my forehead, one right here, and one right here that didn't really work. And each time I asked the dermatologist if I could keep the cyst after the surgery, and they told me, no, it's against Connecticut law. You're not allowed to bring home like your body part. So if you have a organ removed, like a kidney or a small intestine, or I had my adenoids removed, whatever you get removed, they have to, the surgeons have to dispose of that somehow. You're not allowed to put it in a jar and bring it home as a keepsake, which I think is kind of bullshit, because if you did have something big taken out, if you had to have your leg amputated, I would want the option of taking it home. I would choose to put it in a cooler. I want my leg. I want to like stuff it and put it on the wall after I get it amputated. I believe we should have that option, but as of right now, it is illegal. So I do think what your dentist is doing and what you're doing is illegal, and I don't like it. And if you did it to me, you bet your ass I'm bringing a lawsuit, and I'm bringing your business down and everyone with me. As to your question, though, how should you proceed going forward? Like most things in life, ignorance is bliss. You should not bring it up. Just keep pocketing your patients' teeth. Wow, that's a weird sentence. Yeah, just keep pocketing them, bring them home, act dumb, keep doing it till someone brings it to your attention. If you have your boss or your supervisor brings it to your attention, it's like, hey, a creepy dental hygienist, stop bringing teeth home. That is against our policy. Just act dumb and like, oh, I didn't know. My apologies. If they keep pushing and like, no, we know you know. We've been monitoring you for months doing this. That's when you bring out the policy book. That's when you tell them, like, hey, I read through our employee handbook. It says nothing about taking extracted teeth home to do arts and crafts projects with. And that should save your job. If it doesn't, that's when you go nuclear. Now, I'm going to say this. I am not a rat. I am not a rat. I would never rat out an employee for doing something, and I don't advise it. But if they're coming at you and they're coming at you hard, just give up your boss, give up your dentist, and rat her out. Like, well, my dentist is taking teeth. Why can't I take teeth? That is the last option. That's your nuclear option. Don't press that button unless we're entering World War III. Otherwise, stop stealing my teeth. Go suck a fat one.